This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hello, and welcome to episode 10 of Strong Style History here at Place to Be Nation, the Pro Wrestling Only Board podcast feed. I am your host, Jeffrey Wessel. I run the Strong Style Story blog at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. You can find me on Twitter at Strong Style History, Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. And we also do the Strong Style Story podcast here at Place to Be Nation, which you could listen to now, in which we discuss Fantasticomania, The New Beginning, and much more with happenings of current New Japan Pro Wrestling. With me today is my co-host, Lawrence O'Brien. Lawrence, how are you today?
Hello again, everybody.
Earlier this week, as we record, on January the 17th, 2018, a historic event happened in which Will Ospreay wrestled Pete Dunne at IPW's Magnificent Seven event in Milton Keynes in the UK. The historic aspect of this is that this is the first time in 25 years that a reigning WWE champion had faced off against a reigning IWGP champion, with Pete Dunne being the current UK heavyweight champion and Will Ospreay being the current IWGP junior heavyweight champion. The last time this happened was on May the 3rd, 1993, and that's what we're going to be talking about today, the match between then WWF champion Hulk Hogan and the then IWGP heavyweight champion The Great Muta. Lawrence, do you have any opening comments for this?
Well, I'd say, like, first of all, the last time Hogan had been in New Japan at this till that point was in 1990, where he had it's hard to explain. It was like that. It was that WWF All Japan New Japan Wrestling Summit show where he faced Stan Hansen in 1990. So I guess you can count
so
that.
Someone who he used to team with in New Japan, in fact.
Right. So, but I guess if you're going to really discount just like actual New Japan, like just like a straight up New Japan, was he wrestled 18 matches in 1985 in New Japan.
Correct. With I believe the last one being an IWGP Heavyweight Championship challenge against Antonio Inoki that he lost via countout.
You are correct.
It went better than
the last one that they had.
Yeah. Well, you know, Hulk Hogan actually has quite a history in New Japan. In fact, one could argue that New Japan was really the first place that Hogan really made a name for himself with where we became known as Ichiban Hogan. And he really left quite an impact. In fact,
Antonio Inoki for the
right
IWGP title.
Not the title. That was actually the actual International Wrestling Grand Prix tournament. This was before the actual title belt. This was a tournament, but yes, Hogan won the inaugural one. And to the effect where Hogan actually recorded a disco album in Japan at one point.
Oh my God! I actually did not realize that.
I never heard of that. Yeah, Hogan actually. That's where Hogan really got his first taste of celebrity, was in New Japan. And in fact, even when he had left the World Wrestling Federation to go work for Vern Gagne's AWA, the American Wrestling Association, AWA at that time had a deal with All Japan Pro Wrestling, yet Hogan still was very loyal to Antonio Inoki, Possibly stemming from the fact that Hogan's trainer was, you know, a good friend of Inoki's, Hiro Matsuda. So there was a little bit of omerta going on there between Hogan and Inoki. But the circumstances leading up to this match were pretty interesting. The show itself was the first wrestling Dontaku show that ever occurred on May the 3rd, 1993, from the Fukuoka Dome.
First, maybe we should talk about how each guy actually won the title going into this respective show.
Sure thing. Lawrence, why don't you take it away here?
Yeah, so Muto had won this title back in 92 when he beat Choshu, correct? That's what I'm reading here. Was it the unification of the greatest 18?
I believe so. Yes.
Or is it like?
I believe that's. I believe that was it.
Yeah, it was weird. it was really strange. But Muta beat Choshu in 92, and he held it for quite a while into 93. He was still the champion, obviously, here at this point, and. I don't know. You have any like specific memories of that run of his, Jeff? I mean, from that time.
I really don't. I have to. I would have to search my memory banks for that, to be honest. I have watched quite a bit. I mean, even though you know, Great Muta is my Keiji Muto is my personal favorite wrestler of all time. You were correct, is that match was a. It was kind of a unification match that when Muta won it for Riki Choshu's The Greatest 18 Championship, which a title we've discussed on the show previously as well, when he won that at G1 Climax Special 1992 on August the 16th of 1992.
I'm coming up to this. He had beaten he beat Shinya Hashimoto. He defended it against Scott Norton.
Yes, I remember that match.
Then he defended it against Sting. Then it was after that.
Well, it should be noted that this here. It should be noted that this reign, particular reign of Muta's, was the then record-setting reign for the IWGP title at 400 days. When he was beaten then, by the guy who would eventually claim the longest reign for quite some time until it was recently broken by Kazuchika Okada in Shinya Hashimoto for his first IWGP title.
That was the last defense he had before this this Hogan match, which was actually, I mean, it wasn't like a title for title thing or anything.
It was not. It was not a title for title match, but
no, but it was. Yeah, they met.
But meanwhile,
in that circumstance.
But meanwhile, WWF side of things.
One of my favorite stories ever. Just one of the biggest train wreck. Moments in the company's history. I mean, I think could be collectively said about this. So 93 was just a train wreck year for the Fed. It was just it was a really, really weird ass time. Just a really period of transition of the old wasn't quite gone, but the new wasn't quite like there yet. and as you could say, Vince didn't quite believe in the new yet. It was just a very awkward transition period. We get to WrestleMania 9, and Bret Hart's the champ, and Yokozuna had God rest his soul, had just won the Royal Rumble in January, and they were on the collision course for the main event of WrestleMania 9, which is probably the worst WrestleMania ever. and not the fault Bret Hart at all. I mean, because, you know, it's not really his fault. It was just, man, that show just stunk. It was bad. I'm sure you remember, Jeff, how horrible that WrestleMania was.
Actually, you know what? I was not watching at the time because I was in college and didn't have easy. It took me a while to say that show, but yeah, that show was god awful. I will correct you and say we could make the case that WrestleMania 13 might have been the worst one, except for the fact that it had possibly the greatest WWF match of all time in Bret Hart versus Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Save the show. Everybody realizes, but yeah, I mean that WrestleMania 9 overall was just a train wreck, and I mean it was just, and it just got the cherry on top was this main event. So I mean it was, you know, a match, and then Bret got the salt thrown in his eyes by Mr. Fuji, as we all know, and that allowed Yokozuna to catch Bret Hart off guard, pin him, and win the title. WrestleMania is over, right? Like, right? Wrong.
Right?
So, there's always been a lot of speculation of how this really kind of came about, and well, honestly, a lot of it just comes down to, I think, you know, Vince just kind of had a very, very sudden change of heart. And no pun intended. It was basically Vince kind of said, Bret Hart is, or you know, nor Yokozuna nor Bret Hart are ready to like put the company on, you know, be on top of the company yet. And he panicked and was basically like, hey, brother, hey, Terry, you wanna, you know, come back and win the title again for us, brother. Out comes.
Go ahead.
Out comes Hulk Hogan, following this pretty mediocre match that Yokozuna and Bret Hart had, and Hulk Hogan just straight up challenges Yokozuna right in the, you know, smack dab in the middle of the ring, and for whatever stupid ass reason Yokozuna accepts. You know, it's like, why would you do that after, you know, you're like, you just won the title and you're like, you know, you cashed in your opportunity from the Rumble and you just won the title. It's like, but yeah, sure, yeah, okay. And Hulk Hogan then proceeds to beat Yokozuna and was about like a minute. It's like a minute, right? I'm trying to remember now.
It was something to that effect, but yeah, it was one of the grander clusterfucks of that era of the WWF, for sure. It should also be noted
I got to see the match on this, because it was like hilarious. I'm sorry. I overestimated that. It was 21 seconds.
Oh my goodness.
21 seconds, folks. 21 seconds.
Good golly, Miss
and
Molly.
It's just, you know, it's like, it would have been one thing if Hulk Hogan went in there and had even a 7-minute match with Yokozuna. You know, like, but my God, I mean, Yokozuna literally got, like, jobbed out to Hogan in 21 seconds after just winning the title in the main event. Like, you can't write stupider stuff if you tried. I mean, it's like, it is probably one of the worst booking decisions in wrestling history. I don't even think it's like understating it. It's still to this day, I think, puzzles pretty much everybody. I mean, it was just horrible. It was just a downright terrible way. And Yokozuna was very fortunate his career wasn't completely tanked by it. It kind of was, but it, you know, he suffered for a little while. I mean,
yeah, know, he certainly did. And you know, a recurring theme through the career of Hulk Hogan is how people suffered from taking defeats to him. But it should also be noted that during this time it was also around the time of the steroid investigations
going on,
and there was some fear of Hogan turning, possibly throwing Vince under the bus.
Oh, the famed Arsenio Hall.
Yes. Appearance. So, somehow it was arranged for not only Hulk Hogan, but Ed Leslie, Brutus Beefcake, and Jimmy Hart to partake in Wrestling Dontaku. Now, to go to the roots of Wrestling Dontaku, the date is always held in Fukuoka. It is always held on May the 3rd, although this coming year it will be held on both May the 3rd and 4th. But the date is Constitution Memorial Day, a national holiday in Japan. And actually, the word Dontaku is an obsolete word for holiday, which came from the Dutch word for Sunday, which is Zondag. So that's, if you ever wondered why it was called that, there you go. This show was interesting from the fact that not only were WWF wrestlers involved, but so were WCW wrestlers, as Sting also was on this show. So let's very quickly, just to give some context here, first of all, the Hogan versus Muda match was not the main event of the show. No. Just want to throw that out there. That was Antonio Inoki and Tatsumi Fujinami beating Genichiro Tenryu and Riki Choshu in a tag team match. But other matches on the card include Akira Nogami, El Samurai, and Takayuki Iizuka beating Hiroyoshi Yamamoto, Osamu Nishimura, and Satoshi Kojima in the opening match. Two of these wrestlers had name changes through their careers, as Takayuki Iizuka, of course, is now known as Takashi Iizuka of Suzuki-gun, and Hiroyoshi Yamamoto would find greater fame as Hiroyoshi Tenzan.
Wow, that's something.
Michiyoshi Ohara beat Akitoshi Saito on this show, as did Brutus Beefcake, with Jimmy Hart managing, beating Masa Saito, someone who, as we've discussed on a previous program, had some experience in the WWF himself.
Oh, isn't it great to be Hulk Hogan's friend?
The fourth match of the show had a Heisei Ishingun team of Great Kabuki, Kengo Kimura, Kuniaki Kobayashi, Masashi Aoyagi, and Shiro Koshinaka beating Ashura Hara, Hiro Saito, Super Strong Machine, Takashi Ishikawa, and Tatsutoshi Goto.
Wow.
The fifth match saw Tiger Mask 3, who was, of course, Koji Kanemoto, beating Jushin Liger. Scott Norton and Sting went to a no contest. I'm sure that was a fun match. Hiroshi Hase fell to Yoshiaki Fujiwara, excuse me. And then, in the match before Hogan and Muda, the Hellraisers, who of course were Road Warrior Hawk and Power Warrior, a.k.a. Kensuke Sasaki, beating the other two Three Musketeers of Masahiro Chono and Shinya Hashimoto.
They're pretty darn cool card, though, honestly.
This may be worth going back and rewatching. Maybe as we get closer to Wrestling Dontaku this year, as it'll be the 25th anniversary of this show. So maybe we'll do that coming up closer to the month of May. So we get to the match, the historic encounter between WWF Heavyweight Champion, the worldwide icon, who was already somewhat of an icon in Japan anyway, against this new talent, but one who will become a legend himself in Keiji Muto, the Great Muda. The reactions that they both got were both fascinating, I thought. I mean, the crowd was very pumped for this match.
Oh, yeah.
I thought. And it just goes to, and again, you know, when Hogan entered when Hogan entered, he, even though he was still in, this was, you know, peak Hulkamania, or actually probably towards the end of Hulkamania, he's still doing his Ichiban, you know, motions, you know. Like, he remembers his old gimmick, you know.
Yeah, it was pretty great. Honestly, it was pretty kind of like an unselfish callback by him.
Oh yeah, definitely. So to start the match, you know, Great Muta began the match how Great Muta usually begins a match, by spitting the green mist into the air and motioning that he's going to kill Hogan.
Oh yeah, that was great.
Oh yeah, I mean this was, and mind you, Muta was still more famous in, I think, more famous in America than Japan at this point, because of his, you know, his storied time in the NWA. You know, where we'd take on the likes of Ric Flair and Sting, and, you know, Sting and Muta had a, you know, killer feud way back when.
Mm.
And then the biggest shock for probably a lot of people who may not be so familiar with Hulk Hogan's output in Japan is that Hogan actually kind of sort of wrestles in this match.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, he gives it a go. Some nice rolling arm bars and you know, some various other like technical attempts at technical wrestling.
Right, but I mean, again, this is like more than he usually ever shows. I mean, ever showed in America after a certain point. You know, probably 1987 being that point, probably. You know, the height of Hulkamania.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
But yeah. So I mean, and really, if you watch this match, it really is something to behold. If you've never seen Hogan wrestle in Japan. Now, while I was doing research for this, I actually came across a match from February the 8th of 1984. It was from Aichi. It was just a spot show in Aichi, but this match made tape. It was a six-man tag match between Antonio Inoki, Akira Maeda, and Kengo Kimura versus Hulk Hogan, Iron Mike Sharp, and this is when Hogan was in his first reign as a WWF champion. Iron Mike Sharp, and then a not yet debuted in the WWF yet, Bret Hart.
Yeah.
And which, wow. no surprise, Inoki pinning Bret Hart.
That's something else.
But I mean, you could see. I mean, he actually enjoyed his time in Japan. You could tell that Hogan was all about Japan when he was there.
Oh yeah, loved it. You can tell, of course.
I mean, yeah. I mean, he acts a lot more. You know, he very very much motivated, which is why I can definitely you know, recommend this match. Now, there were a few wild spots in this match as well. You know, possibly the one that we usually see is, you know, Muta doing his famous run up to the end of the ramp and then run all the way back and lariat over the ropes, in which they both get stuck in the ropes.
And he swung on like the rope ladder they had.
That was yes.
The ceiling and like threw himself into Hogan. It was like, what the hell is he doing? And
that was some definite theatrics going on. Hogan, in the meantime, following the rope ladder spot, Muta tries to grab a chair to swing at Hogan. Tiger, a younger looking Tiger Hattori, removes the chair, and then Hogan immediately takes the chair from Tiger Hattori, goes to swing it at Muta. Muta spits the mist. Crowd goes wild. Although it must be said, he didn't hit.
He hit him Hogan in the chest.
He hit him in the chest. Thankfully, Hogan still sold it, to his credit.
Yeah, no,
to his
he
credit,
did.
He still sold it.
Yeah.
But in between there, you know, when Hattori is getting the chair from Muta, of course, Hogan hit his Japanese finisher. Now, something else that maybe not a lot of people realize is that Hogan had a different finisher in Japan, the Axe Bomber, that's made possibly more famous now by Takao Omori of All Japan Pro Wrestling. as being his signature move. But yes, yeah, the Axe Bomber crooked arm lariat, which I thought was always a much more effective finisher than the leg drop of Doom, and probably would have saved Hogan's knees and hips from
Yeah.
doing that, doing an Axe Bomber instead.
Yeah, he did the leg drop though too. So
He did do the leg drop, but he didn't use it as a finish, and
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, it was pretty neat. Like he didn't like he went and used the his old finish to be like his real finish in
right.
this.
It was funny as I was, again, I was doing research on this. For some reason, I came across an old Facebook post of Hogan's where he was, describing the match. And he even, acknowledges the fact that, yeah, the leg drop didn't work, so he had to revert to Axe Bomber to take Muta down.
Yeah.
But in the end, of course, it was Hogan that won the match, even though this was not a title match. I'm sure there was some politics involved. That Hogan doesn't go down, brother.
Yeah. Yeah,
One
no.
way or the
Yeah.
other. But what's interesting about this is in the lead up, both in the lead up and the post match, Hogan buries the WWF.
Oh yeah.
And there's an interview you can find on YouTube where Hogan is talking with Masa Saito,
Oh, I never saw this.
where he says that, he's a 5-time WWF champion, but with the title he really wants, of course, is the IWGP title.
Holy sh! Wow.
And then late, so it was a pretty decent promo. But then post match, and at this time, he never. It should be noted that in either of these promos, he never gets into Hogan mode. No,
Yeah.
listen, brother. He
Huh.
never gets into that. He is a he actually is, using his normal speaking voice throughout all this. But what's amazing is in the post-match interview where he says that he's a 5-time WWF heavyweight champion, but the title is just a toy. It's a trinket you can hang from a Christmas tree. And that the real title is the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, and he wants to come back because he doesn't want to do the bullshit anymore. Straight up, that was his a quote
Yeah.
from Hogan. He doesn't want to do the bullshit anymore.
My God. Yeah, you could tell that guy was on his way out of the business. Although he thought at the time, I think he thought it was the
The
business.
business, yeah,
And
and
then
yeah.
until Eric Bischoff changed his mind.
Yeah, but that was
Wow.
he even says that, hey, Inoki, if you got time, when you're in the Japanese government, you could step away for a few minutes. I want you in the ring again.
Oh my God.
Somewhere
Whew.
there is an alternate universe where this happened.
I seriously though, man, that would've been crazy.
But I mean, again, I think one of the things that is just the unreality is that we all have this image of the output that Hogan did for much of his career, mostly in the WWF. And this match just flies against it. I mean, yeah, he still was never going to be confused for, Yoshiaki Fujiwara or Carl Gotch. But,
Yeah.
he tried,
Yeah.
It's amazing to watch, especially when you think of, your typical Hulk Hogan match. It doesn't seem, usually mailing it in is barely scratching the surface.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to say that, this is one of the best matches of all time. It's a very fun match to watch, though.
Yeah, I thought I enjoyed it. It wasn't
And,
anything
I mean, it.
particularly incredible or anything, but
Right, but I
it was
mean, but
pretty neat.
there's the history behind it because it was, of course, a WWF champion facing off against an IWGP champion
Yeah.
is why we're discussing it here. But what's the fallout from this match? Well, mostly on Hogan's end, following that match, He would wrestle a couple more times in New Japan. During this period, he would wrestle against actual Keiji Muto, not the great Muta, on September 26, 1993, mm-hmm. 6 days after Muta dropped the title to Shinya Hashimoto.
Yeah.
He would also team up with Great Muta and Masahiro Chono against the Hellraisers, who were, of course, Kensuke Sasaki as Power Warrior and the Road Warriors.
Yeah.
And his final match would be at the January 4th Tokyo Dome show.
Against Fujinami. Yeah.
Against Fujinami, back when it was called Battlefield. However, he was a freelancer by then, because in those matches he was a freelancer because on June the 13th, after King of the Ring, Hogan would wrestle. He dropped the title back to Yokozuna under suspicious circumstances.
Harvey Whippleman, cameraman.
Right. But
oh my God!
After August, he sat out the rest of his contract with the WWF. He was done. And yep. he thought he might have been done in professional wrestling.
Yeah, he's doing Thunder in Paradise.
Yeah. Bar a few New Japan appearances until June of 1994, when of course Hulk Hogan was signed to
WCW.
And win the title from Ric Flair on his first appearance for the company.
Of course.
So, but it's just interesting to know that, we had a chance where, a rarity where we have two promotions champions, and I mean, we're talking major promotions champions, will go against each other. Like, I don't think we could ever see that happening today. Ever. And the fact that the match happened in IPW with a WWE champion and a New Japan champion facing off against each other, that's, you always have to think that neither company maybe were aware of this.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. It was just like, whoa, I'm kind of crazy how that happened, but that's cool though. It's very interesting that they decided to do that. I don't think that those titles are really on the same scale as each other. It's like,
no, of course not. I mean, of course not. I mean, it's not. Neither of them are major titles. I mean,
it's not quite as comparable to WWF heavyweight title to in IWGP heavyweight title. But
right, of course. The UK championship is kind of a questionable of what that actually is all about.
Yeah, what it even really is, but
Yeah.
And it helps Pete Dunne look good, so I'm not going to complain about that.
Hey, no worries there. But, and also, when you look at things like this, you almost also kind of forget that, deep down, Terry Bollea is really kind of a horrible person who helped, tank at least one wrestling company, too.
Yeah. Yeah. True.
Yeah.
Oh God, yeah, no, that's not really an understatement, but
yeah, when you look at that. However, it must be said that the loss to Hogan didn't really hurt Keiji Muto's career either.
No, that was obviously in a vacuum. Really, it was almost like non-canon, as if you want to go in that, like...
That may be actually a good way of looking at this match, is this did kind of exist in a vacuum. It was a triumphant return for an old New Japan, for an old New Japan stalwart. He was there for 5 years in the 80s. Came back to great effect, and had, again, a pretty fun wrestling match, which at the end of the day, what more can you ask for?
Oh yeah, no, for sure. It was really cool. It was just like really interesting seeing him come back at that point, shrunken from no steroids and all, and
right.
It was like, oh, I always get a kick. It's like you could just tell, like you could literally see, like exactly when he stopped doing them. It's like, oh my god, like whoa, what happened to Hulk Hogan?
Like, well, right. Well, I mean, sometimes you know, sometimes it, all you need is a little Ichiban Hogan to. It's a fun time. I would highly recommend seeking out some of his older matches, especially against Inoki, because they had quite a series against each other.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
So at the end of the day, hopefully, you know, who knows how long, when the next time the champions of two major companies will face off against each other, but I guess time will only tell. Hopefully, maybe there won't be a 25-year gap next time. Our producer today was Chris Damasano. Lawrence, if you like to plug yourself today.
You can follow me on Twitter at LOB_3. I've been kind of talking more wrestling again lately. Been trying to get back into the flow of things. So hit me up with your takes or whatever if you want to chat. So.
And of course, you can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in Style on Twitter, the blog Strong Style Story, where we focus on modern New Japan. You can find that at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. And this has been the first of, hopefully will be many Strong Style Stories in 2018. We kind of got derailed a little bit in 2017. I do want to shout out a previous guest of this show, Brett Querner, Bahu FMW. He got married last week.
Yeah, that's right. I saw that.
Yeah. Had a Hayabusa wedding cake too. So
yeah, you know what? That's great. That's
fantastic. Completely excellent. Yeah. I mean, he has such. Yeah, it's great that his passion for FMW is still alive today and. He's doing great things. If you still haven't caught his History of FMW podcast on YouTube or iTunes, go ahead and check that out. And we're very grateful that he was able to come onto the show last October to discuss Atsushi Onita, who of course is now retired. So that's all I have today. Thank you for tuning in to Strong Style History here at Place to Be Nation, the Pro Wrestling Only Bar podcast feed. Stay tuned for other fine programs, including Greetings from Allentown, another historical show, as is the Worldcast, going through the days of world-class championship wrestling down at the Dallas Sportatorium. And of course, you can listen to Strong Style Story on this network as well, on any of your preferred podcast apps. On behalf of producer Chris Damasceno, Lawrence O'Brien, I am Jeffrey Wessel. Thanks for listening. Take care of yourselves. We'll see you soon. Bye.